is or what else she ought to say. "Do you?" He leaned forward, his big hands on his knees. "If so, give up this quest of yours. The hound is dead, and in any case he never had your Sansa Stark. As for this beast who wears his helm, he will be found and hanged. The wars are ending, and these outlaws cannot survive the peace. Randall Tarly is hunting them from Maidenpool and Walder Frey from the Twins, and there is a new young lord in Dary, a pious man who will surely set his lands to rights. Go home, child. You have a home, which is more than many can say in these dark days. You have a noble father who must surely love you. Consider his grief if you should never return. Perhaps they will bring your sword and shield to him after you have fallen. Perhaps he will even hang them in his hall and look on them with pride. But if you were to ask him, I know he would tell you that he would sooner have a living daughter than a shattered shield. A daughter? Brian's eyes filled with tears. He deserves that. A daughter who could sing to him and grace his hall and bear him grandsons. He deserves a son, too, a strong and gallant son to bring honour to his name. Galadon drowned when I was 4 and he was 8, though, and Alison and Arianne died still in the cradle. I am the only child the gods let him keep, the freakish one, not fit to be a son or daughter. All of it came pouring out of Brain then, like black blood from a wound. The betrayals and betrothals, Red Ronnet and his rose, Lord Renly dancing with her, the wager for her maidenhead, the bitter tears she shed the night her king wed Margaery Tyrell, the melee at Bitterbridge, the rainbow cloak that she had been so proud of, the shadow in the king's pavilion, Renly dying in her arms, River Run and Lady Catelyn, the voyage down the Trident, dueling Jamie in the woods, the bloody mummers, Jamie crying, "Sapphires!" Jamie in the tub at Harrenhal, with steam rising from his body, the taste of Vargo Hote's blood when she bit down on his ear, the bear pit, Jamie leaping down onto the sand, the long ride to King's Landing, Sansa Stark, the vow she'd sworn to Jamie, the vow she'd sworn to Lady Catelyn, Oathkeeper, Duskendale, Maidenpool, Nimble Dick and Cracklaw and the Whispers, the men she'd killed. "I have to find her," she finished. "There are others looking, all wanting to capture her and sell her to the Queen. I have to find her first. I promised Jamie." "Oathkeeper," he named the sword. "I have to try to save her, or die in the attempt."
Catelyn. The meeting place was a grassy sward dotted with pale grey mushrooms and the raw stumps of felled trees. "We are the first, milady," Hallis Mollen said, as they reined up amidst the stumps, alone between the armies. The direwolf banner of House Stark flapped and fluttered atop the lance he bore. Catelyn could not see the sea from here, but she could feel how close it was. The smell of salt was heavy on the wind, gusting from the east. Stannis Baratheon's foragers had cut the trees down for the siege towers and catapults. Catelyn wondered how long the grove had stood, and whether Ned had rested here when he led his host south to lift the last siege of Storm's End. He'd won a great victory that day, all the greater for being bloodless. "God grant that I shall do the same," Catelyn prayed. Her own liegemen thought she was mad even to come. "This is no fight of ours, my lady," Sir Wendell Mandley had said. "I know the king would not wish his mother to put herself at risk." "We are all at risk," she told him, perhaps too sharply. "Do you think I wish to be here, sir? I belong at River Run with my dying father, at Winterfell with my sons. Rob sent me south to speak for him, and speak for him I shall. It would be no easy thing to forge a peace between these brothers, Catelyn knew, yet for the good of the realm it must be tried." Across Rhaen's sudden fields and stony ridges, she could see the great castle of Storm's End rearing up against the sky, its back to the unseen sea. Beneath that mass of pale grey stone, the encircling army of Lord Stannis Baratheon looked as small and insignificant as mice with banners. The song said the Storm's End had been raised in ancient days by Durin, the first Storm King, who had won the love of the fair Elaenai, daughter of the sea god and the goddess of the wind. On the night of their wedding, Elaenai had yielded her maidenhood to a mortal's love, and thus doomed herself to a mortal's death. And her grieving parents had unleashed their wrath and sent the winds and waters to batter down Durin's hold. His friends and brothers and wedding guests were crushed beneath collapsing walls or blown out to sea. But Elaenai sheltered Durin within her arms, so he took no harm. And when the dawn came at last, he declared war upon the gods and vowed to rebuild. 5 more castles he built, each larger and stronger than the last, only to see them smashed asunder when the gale winds came howling up Shipbreaker Bay, driving great walls of water before them. His lords pleaded with him to build inland. His priests told him he must placate the gods by giving Elaenai back to the sea. Even the small folk begged him to relent. Durin would have none of it. A 7th castle he raised, most massive of all. Some said the children of the forest helped him build it, shaping the stones with magic. Others claimed that a small boy told him what he must do, a boy who would grow to be Bran the Builder. No matter how the tale was told, the end was the same. Though the angry gods threw storm after storm against it, the 7th castle stood defiant, and Durin Godsgrief and fair Elaenai dwelt there together until the end of their days. Gods do not forget, and still the gales came raging up the narrow sea. Yet Storm's End endured. Through centuries and tens of centuries, a castle like no other. Its great curtain wall was 100 feet high, unbroken by arrow slit or postern. Everywhere rounded, curving, smooth, its stones fit so cunningly together that nowhere was crevice nor angle nor gap by which the wind might enter. That wall was said to be 40 feet thick at its narrowest, and nearly 80 on the seaward face. A double course of stones with an inner core of sand and rubble. Within that mighty bulwark, the kitchens and stables and yards sheltered safe from wind and wave. Of towers there was but one, a colossal drum tower, windowless where it faced the sea, so large that it was granary and barracks and feast hall and lord's dwelling all in one, crowned by massive battlements. That made it look from afar like a spiked fist atop an upthrust arm.
My lady, eh?
Hal Mullen called. 2 riders had emerged from the tidy little camp beneath the castle and were coming toward them at a slow walk.
That will be King Stannis.
No doubt, Catelyn watched them come. Stannis it must be. Yet that is not the Baratheon banner. It was a bright yellow, not the rich gold of Renly's standards, and the device it bore was red, though she could not make out its shape. Renly would be last to arrive. He had told her as much when she set out. He did not propose to mount his horse until he saw his brother well on his way. The first to arrive must wait on the other, and Renly would do no waiting. It is a sort of game. King's play, she told herself. Well, she was no king, so she need not play it. Catelyn was practised at waiting. As he neared, she saw that Stannis wore a crown of red gold, with points fashioned in the shape of flames. His belt was studded with garnets and yellow topaz, and a great square-cut ruby was set in the hilt of the sword he wore. Otherwise, his dress was plain. Studded leather jerkin over quilted doublet, worn boots, breeches of brown rough spun. The device on his sun-yellow banner showed a red heart surrounded by a blaze of orange fire. The crown stag was there, yes, shrunken and enclosed within the heart. Even more curious was his standard-bearer, a woman, garbed all in reds, face shadowed within the deep hood of her scarlet cloak. A red priestess, Catelyn thought, wondering. The sect was numerous and powerful in the free cities and the distant east, but there were few in the Seven Kingdoms.
"Lady Stark,"
Stannis Baratheon said, with a chill courtesy as he reined up, inclined his head, balder than she remembered. "Lord Stannis," she returned. Beneath the tight-trimmed beard, his heavy jaw clenched hard. Yet he did not hector her about titles. For that she was duly grateful. "I had not thought to find you at Storm's End." "I had not thought to be here." His deep-set eyes regarded her uncomfortably. This was not a man for easy courtesies.
"I'm sorry for your lord's death," he said, "though Eddard Stark was no friend to me."
"He was never your enemy, my lord. When the lords Tyrell and Redwine held you prisoner in that castle, starving, it was Eddard Stark who broke the siege."
"At my brother's command, not for love of me," Stannis answered. "Lord Eddard did his duty. I will not deny it. Did I ever do less? I should have been Robert's hand."
"That was your brother's will. Ned never wanted it."
"Yet he took it. That which should have been mine. Still, I give you my word, you shall have justice for his murder."
How they love to promise heads, these men, who would be king. "Your brother promised me the same, but if truth be told, I would sooner have my daughters back and leave justice to the gods. Cersei still holds my Sansa, and of Arya there has been no word since the day of Robert's death.
If your children are found, when I take the city, they shall be sent to you."
"Alive or dead," his tone implied. "And when shall that be, Lord Stannis? King's Landing is close to your Dragonstone, but I find you here instead."
"You are frank, Lady Stark. Very well, I'll answer you frankly. To take the city, I need the power of these southern lords I see across the field. My brother has them. I must needs take them from him."
"Men give their allegiance where they will, my lord. These lords swore fealty to Robert and House Baratheon. If you and your brother were to put aside your quarrel..."
"I have no quarrel with Renly, should he prove dutiful. I am his elder, and his king. I want only what is mine by rights. Renly owes me loyalty and obedience. I mean to have it. From him, and from these other lords."
Stannis studied her face.
"And what cause brings you to this field, my lady? Has House Stark cast its lot with my brother? Is that the way of it?"
"This one will never bend," she thought. Yet she must try nonetheless. Too much was at stake. "My son reigns as king in the north, by the will of our lords and people. He bends the knee to no man, but holds out the hand of friendship to all."
"Kings have no friends," Stannis said bluntly, "only subjects and enemies."
"And brothers,"
a cheerful voice called out behind her. Catelyn glanced over her shoulder as Lord Renly's palfrey picked her way through the stumps. The younger Baratheon was splendid in his green velvet doublet and satin cloak trimmed in vair. The crown of golden roses girded his temples, jade stag's head rising over his forehead, long black hair spilling out beneath. Jagged chunks of black diamonds studded his sword belt, and a chain of gold and emeralds looped around his neck. Renly had chosen a woman to carry his banner as well, though Brienne hid face and form behind plate armor that gave no hint of her sex. Atop her 12-foot lance, the crown stag pranced black on gold as the wind off the sea rippled the cloth. His brother's greeting was curt.
"Lord Renly."
"King Renly," Can that truly be you, Stannis?
Stannis frowned. Who else should it be?
Renly gave an easy shrug. When I saw that standard, I could not be certain. Whose banner do you bear?
Mine own.
The red-clad priestess spoke up.
The king has taken for his sigil the fiery heart of the Lord of Light.
Renly seemed amused by that.
All for the good. If we both use the same banner, the battle will be terribly confused.
Catelyn said, Let us hope there will be no battle. We three share a common foe who would destroy us all.
Stannis studied her, unsmiling. The Iron Throne is mine by rights. All those who deny that are my foes.
The whole of the realm denies it, brother, said Renly. Old men deny it with their death rattle, and unborn children deny it in their mother's wombs. They deny it in Dawn, and they deny it on the Wall. No one wants you for their king.
Sorry.
Stannis clenched his jaw, his face taut.
I swore I would never treat with you while you wore your traitor's crown. Would that I'd kept to that vow.
This is folly, Catelyn said sharply. Lord Tywin sits at Harrenhal with 20,000 swords. The remnants of the Kingslayer's army have regrouped at the Golden Tooth. Another Lannister host gathers beneath the shadow of Casterly Rock, and Cersei and her son hold King's Landing and your precious Iron Throne. You each name yourself king, yet the kingdom bleeds, and no one lifts a sword to defend it but my son.
Renly shrugged. Your son has won a few battles. I shall win the war. The Lannisters can wait my pleasure.
If you have proposals to make, make them, Stannis said brusquely, or I will be gone.
Very well, said Renly. I propose you dismount, bend your knee, and swear me your allegiance.
Stannis choked back rage.
That you shall never have.
You served Robert. Why not me?
Robert was my elder brother. You are the younger.
Younger, bolder, and far more comely.
And a thief, and a usurper besides.
Renly shrugged. The Targaryens called Robert usurper. He seemed to be able to bear the shame. So shall I.
This will not do.
Listen to yourselves. If you were sons of mine, I would bang your heads together and lock you in a bedchamber until you remembered that you were brothers.
Stannis frowned at her.
You presume too much, Lady Stark. I am the rightful king, and your son no less a traitor than my brother here. His day will come as well.
The naked threat fanned her fury.
You are very free to name others traitor and usurper, my lord. Yet how are you any different? You say you alone are the rightful king, yet it seems to me that Robert had two sons. By all the laws of the Seven Kingdoms, Prince Joffrey is his rightful heir, and Tommen after him. And we are all traitors, however good our reasons.
Renly laughed.
You must forgive Lady Catelyn, Stannis. She's come all the way down from River Run, a long way a horse. I fear she never saw your little letter.
Joffrey is not my brother's seed, Stannis said bluntly. Nor is Tommen. They are bastards. The girl as well. All three of them abominations born of incest.
Would even Cersei be so mad? Catelyn was speechless.
Isn't that a sweet story, my lady? Renly asked. I was camped at Hornhill when Lord Tarly received his letter, and I must say it took my breath away.
He smiled at his brother.
I had never suspected you were so clever, Stannis. Were it only true, you would indeed be Robert's heir.
Were it true? Do you name me a liar?
Can you prove any word of this fable?
Stannis ground his teeth. Robert could never have known, Catelyn thought, or Cersei would have lost her head in an instant.
Lord Stannis, she asked, If you knew the Queen to be guilty of such monstrous crimes, why did you keep silent?
I did not keep silent, Stannis declared. I brought my suspicions to John Arryn.
Rather than your own brother?
My brother's regard for me was never more than dutiful, said Stannis. From me, such accusations would have seemed peevish and self-serving, a means of placing myself first in the line of succession. I believe Robert would have been more disposed to listen if the charges came from Lord Arryn, whom he loved.
Ah, said Renly, so we have the word of a dead man.
Do you think he died by happenstance, you purblind fool? Cersei had him poisoned, for fear he would reveal her. Lord John had been gathering certain proofs, which doubtless died with him. How inconvenient!
Catelyn was remembering fitting pieces together. My sister Lysa accused the Queen of killing her husband in a letter she sent me at Winterfell, she admitted. Later, in the Eyrie, she laid the murder at the feet of the Queen's brother, Tyrion. Stannis snorted.
Tch, if you step in a nest of snakes, does it matter which one bites you first?
All this of snakes and incest is droll, but it changes nothing. You may well have the better claim, Stannis, but I still have the larger army. Renly's hand slid inside his cloak. Stannis saw and reached at once for the hilt of his sword, but before he could draw steel, his brother produced a peach. Would you like one, brother? Renly asked, smiling. From High Garden. You've never tasted anything so sweet, I promise you. He took a bite. Juice ran from the corner of his mouth.
I did not come here to eat fruit, Stannis was fuming.
My lords, Catelyn said, we ought to be hammering out the terms of an alliance, not trading taunts. A man should never refuse to taste a peach, Renly said, as he tossed the stone away. He may never get the chance again. Life is short, Stannis. Remember what the Starks say. Winter is coming. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
I did not come here to be threatened either.
Nor were you, Renly snapped back. When I make threats, you'll know it. If truth be told, I've never liked you, Stannis, but you are my own blood, and I have no wish to slay you. So if it is Storm's End you want, take it, as a brother's gift. As Robert once gave it to me, I give it to you.
It's not yours to give. It's mine by rights.
Sighing, Renly half turned in the saddle. What am I to do with this brother of mine, Brian? He refuses my peach, he refuses my castle. He even shunned my wedding.
We both know your wedding was a mama's farce. A year ago, you were scheming to make the girl one of Robert's whores.
A year ago, I was scheming to make the girl Robert's queen, Renly said. But what does it matter? The boar got Robert, and I got Marjorie. You'll be pleased to know she came to me a maid.
In your bed, she's like to die that way.
Oh, I expect I'll get a son on her within the year. Pray, how many sons do you have, Stannis?
Oh, yes.
None. Renly smiled innocently. As to your daughter, I understand. If my wife looked like yours, I'd send my fool to service her as well.
Enough, Stannis roared. I will not be mocked to my face. Do you hear me? I will not.
He yanked his longsword from its scabbard. The steel gleamed strangely bright in the wan sunlight, now red, now yellow, now blazing white. The air around it seemed to shimmer as if from heat. Catelyn's horse whinnied and backed away a step. But Brienne moved between the brothers, her own blade in hand.
Put up your steel, she shouted at Stannis.
Cersei Lannister is laughing herself breathless, Catelyn thought wearily. Stannis pointed his shining sword at his brother.
I'm not without mercy,
thundered he who was notoriously without mercy. Nor do I wish to sully Lightbringer with a brother's blood. For the sake of the mother who bore us both, I will give you this night to rethink your folly, Renly. Strike your banners, and come to me before dawn, and I will grant you Storm's End, and your old seat on the council, and even name you my heir until a son is born to me. Otherwise, I shall destroy you.
Renly laughed. Stannis, that's a very pretty sword, I'll grant you, but I think the glow off it has ruined your eyes. Look across the fields, brother. Can you see all those banners?
Do you think a few bolts of cloth will make you king?
Tyrell swords will make me king. Rowan and Tarly and Karen will make me king with axe and mace and warhammers. Tarth arrows and Penrose lances. Fossaway, Kai, Mullendore, Estamont, Selmy, Hightower, Oakhart, Crane, Caswell, Black Bar, Morrigan, Beesbury, Shermer, Dunn, Footley, even House Florent, your own wife's brothers and uncles, they will make me king. All the chivalry of the South rides with me, and that is the least part of my power. My foot is coming behind. 100,000 swords and spears and pikes. And you will destroy me? With what, pray? That paltry rabble I see there, huddled under the castle walls? I'll call them 5,000, and be generous. Cudfish lords and onion knights and sail swords. Half of them are like to come over to me before the battle starts. You have fewer than 400 horse, my scouts tell me. Free riders in boiled leather who will not stand an instant against armoured lances. I do not care how seasoned a warrior you think you are, Stannis. That host of yours won't survive the first charge of my vanguard.
We shall see, brother.
Some of the light seemed to go out of the world when Stannis slid his sword back into its scabbard.
Come the dawn. We shall see.
I hope your new god's a merciful one, brother. Stannis snorted and galloped away, disdainful. The Red Priestess lingered for a moment behind. Look to your own sins, Lord Renly, she said, as she wheeled a horse around. Catelyn and Lord Renly returned together to the camp where his thousands and her few waited their return. That was amusing, if not terribly profitable, he commented. I wonder where I can get a sword like that. Well, doubtless Loras will make me a gift of it after the battle. It grieves me that it must come to this. You have a cheerful way of grieving, said Catelyn, whose distress was not feigned. Do I? Renly shrugged. So be it. Stannis was never the most cherished of brothers, I confess. Do you suppose this tale of his is true? If Joffrey is the Kingslayer's git, your brother is the lawful heir while he lives, Renly admitted. Though it's a fool's law, wouldn't you agree? Why the older son, and not the best fitted? The crown will suit me, as it never suited Robert, and would not suit Stannis. I have it in me to be a great king, strong, yet generous, clever, just, diligent, loyal to my friends, and terrible to my enemies, yet capable of forgiveness, patient, humble, Catelyn supplied. Renly laughed. You must allow a king some flaws, my lady. Catelyn felt very tired. It had all been for nothing. The Baratheon brothers would drown each other in blood while her son faced the Lannisters alone. And nothing she could say or do would stop it. It's past time I went back to River Run to close my father's eyes, she thought. That much at least I can do. I may be a poor envoy, but I am a good mourner. God save me. Their camp was well sited atop a low stony ridge that ran from north to south. It was far more orderly than the sprawling encampment on the Mander, though only a quarter as large. When he'd learned of his brother's assault on Storm's End, Renly had split his forces,
much as Rob had done at the twins. His great mass of foot he had left behind at Bitterbridge, with his young queen, his wagons, carts, draft animals, and all his cumbersome siege machinery, while Renly himself led his knights and free riders in a swift dash east. How like his brother Robert he was, even in that. Only Robert had always had Eddard Stark to temper his boldness with caution. Ned would surely have prevailed upon Robert to bring up his whole force, to encircle Stannis and besiege the besiegers. That choice Renly had denied himself in his headlong rush to come to grips with his brother. He had outdistanced his supply lines, left food and forage days behind, with all his wagons and mules and oxen. He must come to battle soon, or starve. Catelyn sent Hal Mullen to tend to their horses while she accompanied Renly back to the royal pavilion at the heart of the encampment. Inside the walls of green silk, his captains and lords' bannermen were waiting to hear word of the parley. "My brother has not changed," the young king told them, as Brian unfastened his cloak and lifted the golden jade crown from his brow. "Castles and courtesies will not appease him. He must have blood." "Well, I am of a mind to grant his wish." "Your Grace, I see no need for battle here," Lord Mathis Rowan put in. "The castle is strongly garrisoned and well provisioned. Sir Courtney Penrose is a seasoned commander, and the trebuchet has not been built that could breach the walls of Storm's End. Let Lord Stannis have his siege. He will find no joy in it, and whilst he sits cold and hungry and profitless, we will take King's Landing."
"And have men say, 'I've feared to face Stannis'?"
"Only fools will say that," Lord Mathis argued. Renly looked to the others. "What say you all?"
"I say that Stannis is a danger to you," Lord Randall Tarly declared. "Leave him unblooded, and he will only grow stronger, while your own power is diminished by battle. The Lannisters will not be beaten in a day. By the time you are done with them, Lord Stannis may be as strong as you, or stronger."
Others chorused their agreement. The king looked pleased.
"We shall fight, then."
"I have failed Rob, as I fail Ned," Catelyn thought. "My lord," she announced, "if you are set on battle, my purpose here is done. I ask your leave to return to Riverrun."
"You do not have it."
Renly seated himself on a camp chair. She stiffened. "I had hoped to help you to make peace, my lord. I will not help you to make a war."
Renly gave a shrug. "I dare say we'll prevail without your 25, my lady. I do not mean for you to take part in the battle, only to watch it."
"I was at the Whispering Wood, my lord. I've seen enough butchery. I came here an envoy."
"And an envoy you shall leave," Renly said, "but wiser than you came. You shall see what befalls rebels with your own eyes, so your son can hear it from your own lips. We'll keep you safe, never fear."
He turned away to make his dispositions.
"Lord Mathis, you shall lead the centre of my main battle. Bryce, you'll have the left. The right is mine. Lord Estamont, you shall command the reserve."
"I shall not fail you, Your Grace," Lord Estamont replied.
Lord Mathis Rowan spoke up.
"Who shall have the van?"
"Your Grace," said Sir John Fossoway, "I beg the honour."
"Beg all you like," said Sir Gaillard the Green. "By rights, it should be one of the seven who strikes the first blow.
It takes more than a pretty cloak to charge a shield war," Randall Tarly announced. "I was leading Mace Tyrell's van when you were still sucking on your mother's tit, Gaillard."
A clamour filled the pavilion as other men loudly set forth their claims. The Knights of Summer, Catelyn thought.
Renly raised a hand. "Enough, my lords. If I had a dozen vans, all of you should have one.
but the greatest glory by rights belongs to the greatest knight. Sir Loris shall strike the first blow.
With a glad heart, your grace, the knight of flowers knelt before the king. Grant me your blessing, and a knight to ride beside me with your banner. Let the stag and rose go to battle side by side.
Renly glanced about him. Brian,
your grace.
She was still armoured in her blue steel, though she had taken off her helm. The crowded tent was hot, and sweat plastered limp yellow hair to her broad, homely face.
My place is at your side. I am your sworn shield.
One of seven, the king reminded her. Never fear. Four of your fellows will be with me in the fight. Brian dropped to her knees.
If I must part from your grace, grant me the honour of arming you for battle.
Catelyn heard someone snigger behind her. She loves him, poor thing, she thought, sadly. She'd play his squire just to touch him, and never care how great a fool they think her.
Granted, Renly said. Now leave me, all of you. Even kings must rest before a battle.
My lord, Catelyn said, there was a small sept in the last village we passed. If you will not permit me to depart for Riverrun, grant me leave to go there and pray.
As you will.
Sir Robar, give Lady Stark safe escort to this sept, but see that she returns to us by dawn. You might do well to pray yourself, Catelyn added.
For victory?
For wisdom. Renly laughed.
Loris, stay and help me pray. It's been so long I've quite forgotten how.
As to the rest of you, I want every man in place by first light, armed, armoured, and horsed. We shall give Stannis a dawn he will not soon forget.
Dusk was falling when Catelyn left the pavilion. Sir Robar Royce fell in beside her. She knew him slightly, one of Bronzion's sons, comely in a rough-hewn way, a tawny warrior of some renown. Renly had gifted him with a rainbow cloak and a suit of blood-red armour, and named him one of his seven.
"You are a long way from the Vale, sir," she told him.
"And you far from Winterfell, my lady."
"I know what brought me here, but why have you come? This is not your battle, no more than it is mine."
"I made it my battle when I made Renly my king."
"The Royces are bannermen to House Arryn. My lord father owes Lady Lyser fealty, as does his heir. A second son must find glory where he can." Sir Robar shrugged. "A man grows weary of tourneys." He could not be older than 21, Catelyn thought, of an age with his king. But her king, her Rob, had more wisdom at 15 than this youth had ever learned. Or so she prayed. In Catelyn's small corner of the camp, Shad was slicing carrots into a kettle. Hal Mullen was dicing with three of his Winterfell men, and Lucas Blackwood sat sharpening his dagger.
"Lady Stark," Lucas said when he saw her, "Mullen says it is to be battle at dawn."
"Hal has the truth of it," she answered, and a loose tongue as well, it would seem.
"Do we fight or flee?"
"We pray, Lucas," she answered him. "We pray." Jamie. His hand burned. Still long after they had snuffed out the torch they'd used to sear his bloody stump. Days after, he could still feel the fire lancing up his arm and his fingers twisting in the flames. The fingers he no longer had. He had taken wounds before, but never like this. He had never known there could be such pain. Sometimes, unbidden, old prayers bubbled from his lips, prayers he learned as a child and never thought of since, prayers he had first prayed with Cersei kneeling beside him in the sept at Castle Rock. Sometimes he even wept until he heard the mummers laughing. Then he made his eyes go dry and his heart go dead, and prayed for his fever to burn away his tears.
"Now I know how Tyrion has felt all those times they laughed at him. After the second time he fell from the saddle, they bound him tight to Brienne of Tarth and made them share a horse again. One day, instead of back to front, they bound them face to face.
"Ah, the lovers!" Shagwell sighed loudly. "Ah, what a lovely sight they are! 'Twould be cruel to separate the good knight and his lady." Then he laughed, that shrill high laugh of his, and said, "Ah, but which one is the knight and which one is the lady?"
"If I had my hand, you'd learn that soon enough," Jamie thought. His arms ached and his legs were numb from the ropes, but after a while none of that mattered. His will shrunk to the throb of agony that was his phantom hand, and Brienne pressed against him. "She's warm, at least," he consoled himself, though the wench's breath was as foul as his own. His hand was always between them. Urswick had hung it about his neck on a cord, so it dangled down against his chest, slapping Brienne's breasts as Jaime slipped in and out of consciousness. His right eye was swollen shut, the wound inflamed where Brienne had cut him during their fight, but it was his hand that hurt the most. Blood and pus seeped from the stump, and the missing hand throbbed every time the horse took a step. His throat was so raw he could not eat, but he drank wine when they gave it him, and water when that was all they offered. Once they handed him a cup, and he quaffed it straight away, trembling, and the brave companions burst into laughter so loud and harsh it hurt his ears.
"That's horse piss you're drinking, Kingslayer,"
Rorg told him. Jamie was so thirsty he drank it anyway, but afterward he retched it all back up. They made Brienne wash the vomit out of his beard, just as they had made her clean him up when he soiled himself in the saddle. One damp cold morning, when he was feeling slightly stronger, a madness took hold of him, and he reached for the Dornishman's sword with his left hand and wrenched it clumsily from its scabbard. "Let them kill me," he thought, "so long as I die fighting, a blade in hand." But it was no good. Shagwell came hopping from leg to leg, dancing nimbly aside when Jamie slashed at him. Unbalanced, he staggered forward, hacking wildly at the fool. But Shagwell spun and ducked and darted until all the mummers were laughing at Jamie's futile efforts to land a blow. When he tripped over a rock and stumbled to his knees, the fool leapt in and planted a wet kiss atop his head. Rorg finally flung him aside and kicked the sword from Jamie's feeble fingers as he tried to bring it up.
"That was amusing, Kingslayer," said Vargo Hote. "But if you try it again, I should take you out a hand, or perhaps a foot."
Jamie lay on his back afterwards, staring at the night sky, trying not to feel the pain that snaked up his right arm every time he moved it. The night was strangely beautiful. The moon was a graceful crescent, and it seemed as though he had never seen so many stars. The king's crown was at the zenith, and he could see the stallion rearing, and there the swan. The moon maid, shy as ever, was half hidden behind a pine tree. "How can such a night be beautiful?" he asked himself. "Why would the stars want to look down on such as me?"
"Jamie," Brienne whispered, so faintly he thought he was dreaming it. "Jamie, what are you doing?"
"Dying," he whispered back.
"No," she said, "no, you must live."
He wanted to laugh. "Stop telling me what to do, wench. I'll die if it pleases me.
Are you so craven?"
The word shocked him. He was Jamie Lannister, a knight of the King's Guard. He was the Kingslayer. No man had ever called him craven. Other things they called him. Yes, oathbreaker, liar, murderer. They said he was cruel, treacherous, reckless, but never craven. "What else can I do but die?"
"Live," she said, "live and fight and take revenge."
But she spoke too loudly. Rorg heard her voice, if not her words, and came over to kick her, shouting at her to hold her bloody tongue if she wanted to keep it. "Craven," Jamie thought, as Brienne fought to stifle her moans.
"Can it be? They took my sword hand. Was that all I was, a sword hand? Gods be good, is it true?
The wench had the right of it. He could not die. Cersei was waiting for him. She would have need of him. And Tyrion, his little brother, who loved him for a lie. And his enemies were waiting too, the young wolf who had beaten him in the Whispering Wood and killed his men around him. Edmure Tully, who had kept him in darkness and chains, these brave companions. When morning came, he made himself eat. They fed him a mush of oats, horse food, but he forced down every spoon. He ate again at evenfall and the next day.
Live, he told himself harshly, when the mush was like to gag him. Live for Cersei, live for Tyrion, live for vengeance. A Lannister always pays his debts.
His missing hand throbbed and burned and stank.
When I reach King's Landing, I'll have a new hand forged, a golden hand, and one day I'll use it to rip out Vargo Hoat's throat.
The days and the nights blurred together in a haze of pain. He would sleep in the saddle, pressed against Brienne, his nose full of the stink of his rotting hand, and then at night he would lie awake on the hard ground, caught in a waking nightmare. Weak as he was, they always bound him to a tree. It gave him some cold consolation to know that they feared him that much, even now. Brienne was always bound beside him. She lay there in her bonds like a big dead cow, saying not a word.
The wench has built a fortress inside herself. They will rape her soon enough, but behind her walls they cannot touch her.
But Jaime's walls were gone. They had taken his hand. They had taken his sword hand, and without it, he was nothing. The other was no good to him. Since the time he could walk, his left arm had been his shield arm no more. It was his right hand that made him a knight, his right arm that made him a man. One day he heard Erswick say something about Harrenhal and remembered that was to be their destination. That made him laugh aloud, and that made Timian slash his face with a long, thin whip. The cut bled, but beside his hand he scarcely felt it.
"Why did you laugh?" the wench asked him that night. "Harrenhal was where they gave me the white cloak," he whispered back. "Whence great Tawny. He wanted to show us all his big castle and his fine sons. I wanted to show them, too. I was only 15, but no one could have beat me that day. Ares never let me joust." He laughed again. "He sent me away. But now I'm coming back."
They heard the laugh. That night it was Jaime who got the kicks and punches. He hardly felt them either, until Rorg slammed a boot into his stump, and then he fainted. It was the next night when they finally came. Three of the worst. Shagwell, Noseless Rorg, and Fat Dothraki Zolo, the one who'd cut his hand off. Zolo and Rorg were arguing about who would go first as they approached. There seemed to be no question but that the fool would be going last. Shagwell suggested they should both go first and take her front and rear. Zolo and Rorg liked that notion. Only then they began to fight about who would get the front and who the rear.
"They will leave her a cripple too, but inside, where it does not show." "Wench," he whispered, as Zolo and Rorg were cursing one another, "let them have the meat, and you go far away. It will be over quicker, and they will get less pleasure from it." "They will get no pleasure from what I'll give them," she whispered back, defiant. "Stupid, stubborn, brave bitch." She was going to get herself good and killed, he knew it. "And what do I care if she does? If she hadn't been so pig-headed, I'd still have a hand."
Yet he heard himself whisper,
"Let them do it, and go away inside."
That was what he'd done when the Starks had died before him, Lord Rickard cooking in his armour while his son Brandon strangled himself trying to save him.
"Think of Renly, if you loved him. Think of Tarth, mountains and seas, pools, waterfalls, whatever you have on your Sapphire Isle, think."
But Rorg had won the argument by then.
"You're the ugliest woman I ever seen," he told Brienne. "But don't think I can't make you uglier. You want a nose like mine? Fight me, and you'll get one. And two eyes, that's too many. One scream out of you, and I'll pop one out and make you eat it. And then I'll pull your fucking teeth out, one by one.
Oh, do it, roared, pleaded Shagwell. Without her teeth, she'll look just like my dear old mother. He cackled. And I always wanted to fuck my dear old mother up the ass.
Jamie chuckled. There's a funny fool. I have a riddle for you, Shagwell. Why do you care if she screams?
Oh, wait. I know.
He shouted, Sapphires! As loudly as he could. Cursing, Rorg kicked at his stump again. Jamie howled. I never knew there was such agony in the world, was the last thing he remembered thinking. It was hard to say how long he was gone, but when the pain spit him out, Urswick was there, and Vargo Hoat himself.
Feet not to be touched, the goat screamed, spraying spittle all over Zola. Thee hath to be a maid, you fools. Thee's worth a bagful of sapphires.
And from then on, every night, Hoat put guards on them to protect them from his own. Two nights passed in silence before the wench found the courage to whisper.
Jamie, why did you shout out?
Why did I shout sapphires, you mean? Use your wits, wench. Would this lot have cared if I'd shouted rape?
You did not need to shout at all. You are hard enough to look at with a nose. Besides, I wanted to make the ghost say, Thafoeth,
he chuckled. A good thing for you, I'm such a liar. An honourable man would have told the truth about the Sapphire Isle.
All the same, she said, I thank you, sir.
His hand was throbbing again. He ground his teeth and said, A Lannister pays his debts. That was for the river. And those rocks you dropped on Robin Rhaegar. The goat wanted to make a show of parading him in, so Jamie was made to dismount a mile from the gates in Harrenhal. A rope was looped around his waist, a second around Brian's wrists. The ends were tied to the pommel of Vargo Hoat's saddle. They stumbled along, side by side, behind the Kohoric's striped zorse. Jamie's rage kept him walking. The linen that covered the stump was grey and stinking with pus. His phantom fingers screamed with every step.
I am stronger than they know, he told himself. I am still a Lannister. I am still a knight of the King's Guard.
He would reach Harrenhal, and then King's Landing. He would live,
and I will pay this debt with interest.
As they approached the cliff-like walls of Black Harren's monstrous castle, Brian squeezed his arm.
Lord Bolton holds his castle. The Boltons are bannermen to the Starks. The Boltons skin their enemies.
Jamie remembered that much about the Northmen. Tyrion would have known all there was to know about the Lord of the Dreadfort, but Tyrion was 1,000 leagues away with Cersei.
I cannot die while Cersei lives, he told himself. We will die together, as we were born together.
The castleton outside the walls had been burned to ash and blackened stone, and many men and horses had recently encamped beside the lake shore, where Lord Went had staged his great tourney in the year of the false spring. A bitter smile touched Jamie's lips as they crossed that torn ground. Someone had dug a privy trench in the very spot where he'd once knelt before the king to say his vows.
I never dreamed how quick the sweet would turn to sour. Ares would not even let me savour that one night. He honoured me, and then he spat on me. The banners, Brian observed. Flayed man and twin tire, see? King Rob's sworn men, there, above the gatehouse, grey and white. They fly the direwolf.
Jamie twisted his head upward for a look.
That's your bloody wolf, true enough, he grunted her, and those are heads to either side of it.
Soldiers, servants, and camp followers gathered to hoot at them. A spotted bitch followed them through the camps, barking and growling, until one of the Lyseni impaled her on a lance and galloped to the front of the column.
I am Baron
Kingslayer's banner!" he shouted, shaking the dead dog above Jaime's head. The walls of Harrenhal were so thick that passing beneath them was like passing through a stone tunnel. Vargo Hote had sent two of his Dothraki ahead to inform Lord Bolton of their coming, so the outer ward was full of the curious. They gave way as Jaime staggered past, the rope around his waist, jerking and pulling at him whenever he slowed.
"I give you the Kingslayer,"
Vargo Hote proclaimed in that thick, slubbery voice of his. A spear jabbed at the small of Jaime's back, sending him sprawling. Instinct made him put out his hands to stop his fall. When his stump smashed against the ground, the pain was blinding. Yet somehow he managed to fight his way back to one knee. Before him, a flight of broad stone steps led up to the entrance of one of Harrenhal's colossal round towers. Five knights and a northman stood looking down on him, the one pale-eyed in wool and fur, the five fierce in mail and plate, with a twin tower sigil on their surcoats. "A fury of Freys," Jaime declared. "Sir Danwell, Sir Aenys, Sir Hastine." He knew Lord Walder's sons by sight. His aunt had married one after all. "You have my condolences." "For what, sir?" Sir Danwell Frey asked. "Your brother's son, Sir Cleos," said Jaime. "He was with us until outlaws filled him full of arrows. Urswick and this lot took his goods and left him for the wolves." "My lords," Brian wrenched herself free and pushed forward, "I saw your banners. Hear me for your oath."
"Who speaks?" demanded Sir Aenys Frey.
"Lannister's wet nurse."
"I am Brian of Tarth, daughter to Lord Selwyn, the Evenstar, and sworn to House Stark even as you are."
Sir Aenys spit at her feet.
"That's for your oath. We trusted the word of Rob Stark, and he repaid our faith with betrayal."
"Now this is interesting." Jaime twisted to see how Brian might take the accusation, but the wench was as single-minded as a mule with a bit between his teeth.
"I know of no betrayal."
She chafed at the ropes around her wrists.
"Lady Catelyn commanded me to deliver Lannister to his brother at King's Landing."
"She was trying to drown him when we found them," said Urswick the Faithful.
She reddened.
"In anger I forgot myself, but I would never have killed him. If he dies, the Lannisters will put my lady's daughters to the sword."
Sir Aenys was unmoved.
"Why should that trouble us?" "Ransom him back to Riverrun," urged Sir Danwell. "Castle Rock has more gold," one brother objected. "Kill him," said another. "His head for Ned Stark's."
Shagwell the Fool somersaulted to the foot of the steps in his grey and pink motley and began to sing.
"There once was a lion who danced with a bear. Oh my, oh my."
"Silence, fool!" Vargo Hote cuffed the man. "The Kingslayer is not for the bear. He is mine."
"He is no one, should he die," Roose Bolton spoke so softly that men quieted to hear him. "And pray recall, my lord, you are not master of Harrenhal till I march north."
Fever made Jaime as fearless as he was light-headed. "Can this be the lord of the Dreadfort? When last I heard, my father had sent you scampering off with your tail betwixt your legs. When did you stop running, my lord?" Bolton's silence was 100 times more threatening than Vargo Hote's slubbering malevolence. Pale as morning mist, his eyes concealed more than they told. Jaime misliked those eyes. They reminded him of the day at King's Landing when Ned Stark had found him seated on the Iron Throne. The Lord of the Dreadfort finally pursed his lips and said,
"You have lost a hand."
"No," said Jaime, "I have it here, hanging round my neck." Roose Bolton reached down, snapped the cord, and flung the hand at Hote.
"Take this away. The sight of it offends me."
"I will send it to his lord father. I will tell him he must pay 100,000 dragons, or we shall return the Kingslayer to him. piece by piece, and when we have his gold, we shall deliver Sir Jamie to Carstark and collect a maiden too."
A roar of laughter went up from the brave companions.
"A fine plan,"